Tonight, an audio tour of Electroplankton for the Nintendo DS. Also, the AIAS announced their nominees with one exception. All that in your live calls and chat comments on the Bobby Blackwolf Show, week of January 22nd, 2006. Bobby Blackwolf Show, you're on the air.
Calling in to chime in about this net. And
it's your fault, Doc Wolf. It's you guys who buy these dumb Katamari, Kamari, Catalarm kind of that game.
Bobby Blackwolf back at Dragon Con 2005. I am here at Anime Weekend Atlanta 11. I'm here at the Best Buy in Alpharetta, Georgia, talking about the Xbox 360 launch. DC Nate and everybody in chat's all going, we didn't buy into the hype. You did buy into the hype, you just didn't buy the system.
From a little room in Atlanta, Georgia, it's Bobby Blackwolf.
I'm running so late. Hello, everybody, and thanks to people on the live stream who were able to wait the extra 10 minutes before we could get online. I was working on some stuff, but hey, welcome again to another edition of the Bobby Blackwolf Show, a show where we discuss the current news affecting the video game industry as well as reminisce about gaming's history. My name is Bobby Blackwolf. Now, we are hanging out in the AllGames.com chat room on the GameSurge IRC network, and our Skype line is Bobby Blackwolf Show, all one word. Or, if you're listening to us on the podcast, you can talk with us and comment on things on the show by emailing us at blackwolf@allgames.com. And I want to thank Kropotkin for providing the UK news segment that we ran just before this show went live. That's available as a podcast feed for those who can't tune in live on his website, kropotkin.co.uk. You can get those links and many others by going to our website, allgames.com/podcast. Wanted to touch on some things that I brought up last week, one of which was about MediaPlay. I was talking about it. It's a store that not many places had, but they were going out of business, and I mentioned last week that they were selling off a lot of their stuff and selling off all the fixtures. Well, I went and I did actually pick up some prizes that we're going to start giving away on the show a little bit later. Not tonight, but maybe later. A lot of game soundtracks. I pretty much cleared out their game soundtrack rack. So I have a bunch of sealed game soundtracks to give away on the show. But I also picked up something I didn't think I was going to pick up. And I've got pictures on the forums of this, and everybody thinks I'm stupid for buying this. But I actually decided to grab one of those PlayStation 2 retail kiosks, which are the silver, you know, custom-made. You've seen them. They've been in pretty much any store that has a PlayStation 2 has one of these. Everything still works in it. The lights still work. And, you know, the only thing is the PS2 that's inside doesn't read CDs. So if I really wanted to use it to read CD games, I'd need to switch out the PS2 that's in there. But I got it for a decent price. It was less than what they had it at last time I was in there. So they cut down the price, and it's in my home. So now I'm the proud owner of a retail kiosk. So pretty much one of the reasons I have it is so when people come into my apartment, they have that WTF factor when they come in, not believing what they're actually seeing in the corner. So I thought that was kind of neat. We'll have a link to the forum post in our show notes for those who want to see this, and you can actually see a picture of my cat sitting there right next to the kiosk, thinking it's kind of cool. Also, one thing that luckily did not come to pass, we reported last week that it was a rumor about Nintendo releasing a new DS or something, or having some big announcement. They didn't have any announcements on this past Monday. So nothing came out in Nintendo. So there's no redesign of the DS. There's no new retail product coming out. We don't know anything more, except for some stuff that was told to a Japanese newspaper that we'll get into later. But we're hanging out in the AllGames.com chat room on the GameSurge IRC network. And I'm going to go ahead and turn on our Skype line in case anybody wants to call in. We're going to be talking about some stuff. We do have a audio tour. I'm not going to say review. I wanted to do a review, and then after I recorded it, I realized it's really not a review, but a tour of Electroplankton for the Nintendo DS. I did finally get the game. Amazon never shipped it. I had to go to Nintendo.com to go get it, but apparently there's a lot left. It's not really backordered. It's not really limited, so if you like it after hearing the tour, you can probably still go get it. It's not rare just yet. One thing that I kind of wanted to go into, and this involves some serious stuff. It's not really about a game or anything, but it's about a gamer, and it's about a community. And we're a part of a community here. All Games, we have a big forum community. And unfortunately, another gaming forum community was hit by some very tragic events and some people trying to capitalize on these tragic events. The news story was broken by Gaming Horizon, but it was talking about how earlier this month, a gamer named Mitchell S. with the online screen name Kuja105 posts on a few video game message forums, including GameFAQs.com and MetalGearSolid.org. He committed suicide on January 2nd, where he posted a message on both forums detailing his intent to end his own life, citing overwhelming complications with school and finances. A very brief period of initial disbelief was followed by a barrage of replies from fellow forum members pleading that he not take his life, and they were trying to talk him out of it. For days, no word was heard from Mitchell. Fearing the worst, members of administration from MetalGearSolid.org began searching for contact information, spending hours on the phone trying to get in touch with him. Finally, on January 4th, Ryan Kay, who's an administrator at MetalGearSolid.org, got him on the phone and spent hours desperately trying to talk him out of it. Unfortunately, he soon ended his own life by consuming antifreeze and painkillers. Later, members from the site contacted Mitchell's family to find out the grave news. They reported it to their online community and posted a tribute to their past friend on the front page of MetalGearSolid.org, which is still there. Unfortunately, this is where the story turns. The story was picked up by AFP, which is an international newswire service, and has been carried on Yahoo, CNN, and many other places. The story is completely erroneous, and it's very sad. The AFP writer stated, quote, "The gamer switched on his webcam and swallowed a large amount of motor antifreeze and pills. Other forum members thought the man nicknamed Kujo was joking, even though he rambled for 6 hours about the effects of the substances and disappeared from view several times," unquote. This is untrue. They got the nickname wrong, and Mitchell did not broadcast himself over the internet via webcam. No forum members were thinking he was joking, no rambling for 6 hours, and that was all a complete fabrication. So I wanted to talk about that because, you know, obviously my thoughts are with the young man's family. He was having financial concerns over college and stuff. Had nothing to do with games. He just happened to post on a gaming website. I feel for the MetalGearSolid.org community because I know how I'd feel if somebody actually committed suicide and was a member of our community. Luckily, I've never had to deal with that. I have had to deal with people who faked it several times, but never had to deal with someone that actually happened, and then to see the news media turn this against them. And then seeing somebody else turn it against them, and I've been trying to not talk about Jack Thompson for a while. He hasn't been able to get in the news except for jumping for attention and saying, "Hey, look at me." But he said, "Hey, look at me," in the wrong way. And he posted this on in the comments section of GamePolitics.com, which has now been deleted. From what I understand, it's been he's admitted that it was actually him. And what he actually said is this to MetalGearSolid.org. Quote, "Your gamer friend will find peace through the Lord Jesus Christ, but sadly, it's too late for that. There is a void in every heart. You can fill it up with the things of God or the things not of God. This unfortunate soul chose to fill it up with combat games. The playing of these video games is masturbatory activity, meaning senseless self-stimulation. If you gamers could use a dictionary, you would know that that term is not necessarily a sexual one. The real tragedy here extends beyond the life and death of this one fellow. There are literally millions of young people and young adults whose despair is deepened by turning to the things of this world and then finding them meaningless. All you gamers need to put down the controllers and get a life. The utter inanity of the vast majority of postings here show how vapid gaming really is. You are one of the cheerleaders for this wasting of time and the wasting of lives. Do you feel any remorse for having contributed to this culture of death? Of course not. Hey, let's all play more games and ignore all the really productive things to do with our lives. Let's pretend to be shocked a gamer might descend into deeper depression as his gamer buds, knowing he was killing himself, couldn't figure out how to call 911 themselves for him. That would have involved leaving their computers, I guess. Sad, sad for all of you." And so I'm going to present MetalGearSolid.org's response to this. Quote, "Once again, Mr. Thompson, you've proven that your ignorance knows no bounds. We're not going to participate in this war with you that you wish to wage with us. We're bigger than that. We're bigger than you." This is a case where our tragedy is greater than the sum of our transgressions. The fact that you want to exploit the loss that both we and his family have suffered to forward your own selfish, religiously driven ambitions speaks volumes about the integrity, or lack thereof, of your character, and it only serves to strengthen our resolve. You can continue to try and discredit us and insult us, though no true man of God would do such a thing. We pity you and your ignorance, and only hope that someday you can come to terms with and mature away from your bigotry. As Metal Gear Solid fans, we have learned to believe in the best of individuals, we've learned to show charity, we've become better people, and through the loss of our friends, we become a closer knit community. We forgive you, Jack, and we hope that God will do the same for you. So I just wanted to bring that up because, you know, a lot of people have misinterpreted what's happened and stuff, and I just wanted to, you know, I try not to talk too much about Jack Thompson, but that really got to me. Fifth Dream says that he's glad he took the suicide to inform us of the proper use of a dictionary. The Matrix says that he's going to go play games because he doesn't have anything productive to do. Sub-Z says, yeah, get a life, like Jack, making a living on the misery of others. TDB asks, how many people that are religious commit suicide because they suffer from depression because they can't live up to the rules of their religion? Gita says that he loves their response. This was a very interesting thing, and you know, one more thing that I wanted to talk about in terms of great responses. I may not like their games, but GoPostal.com, which is the website of Running with Scissors that creates the postal games, they issued a statement because recently there was some, I think, a murder like in Russia, and the authorities pinned it on Postal. They said that the gamers played a lot of Postal, and that's why they murdered people. And so everybody was attacking Running with Scissors for this. This is from Vince Desi, who is the CEO of Running with Scissors. Quote, Postal, since its beginning 10 years ago, has been the nearly constant recipient of aggressive misinformation and outright fabrications made by journalists and zealots content to provide their own facts without the benefit of actual research. We feel it is well past time for us once and for all clearly state our position and clarify our intent. Despite our renegade image, we do not enjoy the real-life suffering of flesh-and-blood human beings. Real-life violence is reprehensible and unacceptable. We have always stated that violence belongs in video games, not on the streets. Video games serve as an outlet for aggressions, not as an instigator to it. Just look at the numbers involved. If video games had the power to create murderers, we would be up to our necks in corpses right now. The FBI's national statistics on youth violence indicate it is a 10-year low. The empirical data fails to support the hysterical rhetoric used by anti-game crusaders. In fact, these statistics could potentially be used to support the idea that the increasing popularity of video games is actually helping reduce the rate of real-world violence. The concept of person plays violent video games equals person becomes violent criminal is offensive and ignorant. Violent behavior and mental illness are complex issues, and trivializing them with baseless anti-game incentive helps no one. Postal 2 is intended as social parody in the form of a video game. We took unsavory elements of the American psyche, pop culture, and its ignorance and elevated them to a state where they represent normalcy. Against this comically distorted backdrop of Americana, the player must make choices as the Postal Dude. To kill or not to kill is a question left entirely to the player to decide. Postal 2 was designed to allow completion of all missions without the use of lethal force. This is a fact always overlooked by the zealots and their sympathetic media cohorts. And to the critics who mindlessly repeat the tired litany of glorifying violence, we feel the need to point out another basic aspect of Postal's design. The more violent you play, the more resistance from police, military, and even armed vigilante bystanders you will face. That's right, sometimes even the helpless bystanders will fight back. Considering these examples of Running with Scissors' core design philosophies, it's hard to imagine Postal being considered anything other than a hard lesson in the fact that violence has dire consequences. Unlike any other violent video game on the market, Postal 2 makes no attempt to defend or justify any violence committed by the player. You don't get points for shooting someone in the face. There are no missions based on slaughtering innocent bystanders. The player is placed in a detailed environment and given simple tasks such as buying milk and cashing his paycheck. Just like in the real world, the player can find weapons in the environment if he looks for them. And just like in the real world, the choice of what to do with those weapons is left up to the user. Misuse may result in severe consequences, including jail time or death. In our opinion, that makes Postal 2, get this, in that opinion, that makes Postal 2 the most politically correct game ever made. Yeah. Running with Scissors holds to the concept of free will and taking responsibility for one's own actions. We can only shake our heads in disbelief as self-serving censors market a sad society of blame wherein nobody is responsible for his own actions. It's always the fault of someone that can be sued for large sums of money. So I actually agree with what he's saying here. I may not like the Postal series. It may not be my type of game, but I do agree with what he's saying. It's funny that he uses the same kind of train of logic thought to get to the whole politically correct comment that the anti-game people use. So I thought that was very interesting, and kudos to them for finally standing up more than Rockstar did. Sub-Z says that Super Mario advocates drug use. You eat shrooms and you get bigger. The Matrix says that, oh man, being in jail in Postal 2 sucks so bad. So I'm going to go to a local story. I know that there's probably a few local listeners to Atlanta that listen to this show because I've done a lot of events in the Atlanta area. So you may not know about this, but we have a gaming pub, which is a land center that sells beer. It's called Battle and Brew, and it's in Northwest Metro Atlanta. Now, you're probably saying, oh, cool, I'm going to go. No, you really can't go there right now. They're closed for repairs, and this is just such a weird story that nobody knows about that I'm covering it here, and I'm hoping to get some of the owners on later and maybe to do a show from there or something whenever they reopen. But they're closed to repairs because somebody decided they would play some real-life Burnout Revenge. This is from a forum post from the owner. His name's Andrew, but I don't know what his full name is. It's nowhere on the site. Quote, at around 8:30 on Friday the 13th, at 8:30 p.m., two people were gaming in the corner while he and his wife were standing behind the bar. A group of six had left about 30 minutes prior, as did someone else who had been earlier gaming in the center island. Now the two owners were talking about it being a surprisingly slow Friday night when they noticed some headlights approaching. Now one of them said brightly, quote, here comes another customer. As we watched, the headlights got brighter and brighter, and then, boom, a new silver Maxima crashed through the front of the store, plowing through the front PC table and onto the center island, crushing computer parts and furniture as it went. The fire alarm started blaring and the strobe lights began to flash. Now, it seems that a lot of accidents people say, oh, it all happened so fast. Well, that wasn't the case here. It all happened quite slowly. So slowly that the owner here had time to think to himself, why the hell hadn't that car stopped yet? The car finally stopped, or was stopped, by the bathroom wall in the back of the store. However, undeterred by this wall, the driver continued to press the gas, digging the front tires into the carpet. He walked up and looked in the vehicle and saw that no one inside was injured, and the two gamers who were playing in the corner were sitting exactly where they were, except now they were barricaded behind a wall of mashed-up tables and electronics. After a few moments of stillness, a young Indian woman emerged from the driver's side along with a male passenger. They were both quite calm, though I think the woman was more in a state of shock than calm. They didn't speak to one another aside from asking if anyone was okay. Now they called 911, and in no time all the parking lot was full with police, EMTs, and firemen. Passersby came over to gawk at the mess and snapped photos with their cell phones. So there was some other stuff. You know, one of the owners was about to go all postal on the woman, but they didn't want to talk to her. The man apologized and said that it wasn't deliberate. That would be pretty effed up if it was what he thought. After taking some photos and a short video, they began removing the debris so the Indian man could back the car out of the store, and the owner wanted to ask, quote, are you sure you don't want her to drive? So after boarding up the place, they began taking stock in preparation for the insurance headaches that would soon come. So big sympathy to Battle and Brew, and I hope they get on their feet and stuff. So battleandbrew.com, they actually have a picture of this car, like, all the way in the back by the arcade machines. But everybody's fine. Nobody was injured. Nobody was playing on that center island or anything, or else there would be some injuries. Going on to actual gaming news that would affect another small segment of the population, Xbox 360. How about that? GameIndustry.biz reports that Microsoft has revealed the current top 10 titles available for download through Xbox Live. So these are the top Xbox Live arcade titles. Number 10 is Wick Fable of Souls. Why is it only at number 10? Why haven't more people downloaded Wick? I think people should give Wick a try and play it. It's not Robotron. It's not a Robotron clone like most of these on this list. But I think people should try it out and buy it, so it gets higher than 10. Number 9 is Joust. Number 8 is Mutant Storm Reloaded. Number 7 is Outpost Coloki X. Number 6 is Bankshot Billiards 2, which is ironically the most expensive title on Xbox Live Arcade as well. Number 5 is Zuma. Number 4 is Bejeweled 2. Number 3 is Smash TV. Number 2 is Gauntlet. And number 1, like we reported last week, Geometry Wars Retro Evolved. There's some good titles up there, and I mean, I think this has also shown that people have taken to Xbox Live Arcade, and it's something I'm really glad to see. Dr. Feelgood says, give me a break, $400 to play friggin' jank arcade games. Actually, I'd play more of the independent titles that are cheaper than the $60 titles or $50 titles that I can get in the store. And there are some very good games in there, and I mean I do play regular Xbox 360 games, but when I want a quick fix, I pop in Geometry Wars or Hexic or something like that. Now that we're coming to the midpoint of the show, I'm going to go ahead and play what I've done here with Electroplankton. This isn't really a review. This is more of an audio tour of the game. I'm not going to give a review of it because it doesn't seem fit for a review. Now, Electroplankton is best understood when you understand the creator. Toshio Iwai is a media artist whose art has won worldwide acclaim for its unique fusion of digital and analog images and music. He has collaborated with such people such as musician Ryuichi Sakamoto and movie director Hayao Miyazaki. Don't let the fact that this is for the Nintendo DS fool you. This is not a game. This is interactive art. That's the term I'm going to use for it, interactive art. Some people can say that maybe toy, but I'm going to say interactive art because that's what this is. The back of the box lays out each different plankton as if they were musical tracks on a CD, with 10 tracks in all. Now what we're going to do, we're going to run down each of the 10 plankton and explain how they're played. We're not going to give you any kind of score rating or anything. We're just going to tell you about each track, the pros and cons, and let you just hear what they sound like. We think you guys are smart enough to make your own decision from that. The first track is a plankton called Tracy, and to me it's the least musical out of all the plankton. Why it's first, I really don't know, but it's not a great introduction. The idea here is that you draw lines and patterns, and the plankton follow your drawing repeatedly. You have 6 plankton on the screen, so you can have 6 different patterns going on at once. Track 2 is the closest thing to a game in Electroplankton, Hanenbo. You have leaves that you can position, and then a leaf shoots out plankton. As that plankton hits each leaf, it will turn from green to red. If you can get all 6 leaves on the screen to turn red, a flower will appear. If you had select, you can actually get other leaf configurations, and using the D-pad, you can change the tempo of the plankton coming out, which is something you'll need to do to get the flower to appear. Track 3 is probably the most musical out of all of the tracks in Electroplankton, and it's my favorite. There are 4 plankton, each starting on a corner of a 6x6 square. Each point on this square has an arrow that points to another point, either horizontally, vertically, or diagonally. You can tap on these arrows to change them, or hold down the stylus on them to make them random. Or you can just hit the D-pad and send a wave across so all those arrows point to pre-recorded patterns. Or to make each arrow face in the same direction. Track 4 is Sun Animal Cool, and consists of you laying eggs that make a smiley face and then shine, eventually popping once they grow large enough. Now, one thing I want to note here is how the two screens work. The bottom screen is where you do all your work, and the top screen acts as a magnifying glass to the last place that you touched. Anyway, you can move your already planted eggs to other places of the screen to get different pitches, and as they grow older, they get different voices. And then as they grow older, they die. Track 5 is Rec Rec, which is essentially a 4-track mixer using the microphone. Let's hear some embarrassment.
I'm white, so I shouldn't be rapping. I'm white, so I shouldn't be rapping. I'm white, yeah, so I shouldn't be rapping.
That's right.
I'm white, yeah, so I shouldn't be rapping.
That's right.
I'm white, yeah, so I shouldn't be rapping.
That's right.
I'm white, yeah, so I shouldn't be rapping.
That's right.
I'm white, yeah, so I shouldn't be rapping.
That's right.
Now, using the D-pad, you can change the background track or just change the tempo.
Shouldn't be rapping.
That's right.
I'm white, yeah, so I shouldn't be rapping.
That's right.
I'm white, yeah, so I shouldn't be rapping.
That's right.
I'm white, yeah, so I shouldn't be rapping.
That's right.
I'm white, yeah, so I shouldn't be rapping.
That's right.
I'm white, yeah, so I
shouldn't be rapping. I'm white, yeah, so I
shouldn't be rapping.
That's right. I'm white, yeah, so I shouldn't be rapping.
That's right.
I'm white, yeah, so I
turn that crap off! Okay, enough of that. Track 6 is the Nanocarp, which is a group of 16 plankton that respond to microphone and touch input. You can clap, blow, or sing into the microphone to get them to form formations that either make sense visually or musically. Using the D-pad sends a wave that makes all the plankton make a sound, or you can make waves with the stylus. You'll definitely want to look into the manual for this one to see all the visual formations you can create using certain clapping rhythms.
Thank you.
Track 7 is the soothing Luma Loop. 5 donut plankton that emit a sound as you spin them with the stylus. The faster you roll, the higher their octave. All 5 together create a pentatonic scale. And the select button changes the sounds and the scale. Track 8 is Marine Snow, which are snow crystals that emit a sound. When you tap them, they switch places with the last plankton you tapped, but each one plays a sound. You can also sweep a bunch together with the stylus. The select button changes the formation of the 35 plankton and the sound that they emit. Track 9 is probably the most fun. It's the Beatness Plankton. All the sounds that these plankton emit resemble a Nintendo Entertainment System sound chip. There are 5 plankton on the screen, with the head and tail being sound effects, and the body being a scale. The first song here is from Super Mario Brothers. But if you hit select, you can change the song. Here's Kid Icarus. Here's the quote NES collection with a bunch of different games. Thank you. And finally, here's a more generic robot song. Finally, track 10 is really just a version of a voice effects module, but it's done as a plankton called Volvoice. You can record any sound through the microphone and then hear it manipulated by switching to 15 other plankton, each with a shape that mimics the sound they emit. Here's how they interpret my website.
Allgames.com. Help.
Now, as I said before, Electroplankton is not a game. Some may consider it a toy, others consider it interactive art. Now, Nintendo was very smart in not putting this on store shelves. A random person would buy it, not understand it, and attempt to return it. I don't think it's in any danger of selling out of the online retailers, so for those of you in chat who were actually intrigued by it after as we went along, you can probably go pick one up. I'd suggest getting it directly from Nintendo. Now, this is not going to be a hit here in the States, but it is fun to play around with, even if some of the modes aren't all that great. But if you don't want to just play around with it, there are two modes. There's a performance mode and an audience mode. And in audience mode, it performs for you, and it'll switch between the different tracks and perform for you. Everything you heard there was stuff that I was actually doing on the DS. None of those were done by the computer. And there, it also has different outputs for if you're going through the DS's speakers or if you're going through headphones. And they do some nifty headphone effects about things like swirling around you and stuff. So that's Electroplankton. If that appeals to you, then it's $35 and go get it online. If that doesn't appeal to you, I hope you didn't spend $35 to get it. And so I've been looking through chat during that entire time, and there are actually some people that were actually intrigued by it, which kind of surprised me, but, you know, it's all good. The Matrix says that only the Nintendo songs part appeals to him, but it's pretty fun. I know Bam Bam, who's not in the chat room right now, he really likes the track 2, which has the leaves and the making the flower. He likes that. D5T claims that Reggie has paid me. No, he has not. Tiger Claw puts it pretty much correctly here. Sounds like a fun little app. This is not a game. This is an application. It's interactive art. It's a toy. It's whatever you want to call it. Just don't call it a game. Massman is asking, how long do you think it would last? I'm assuming when he says that, he's asking, you know, how long do you think you'd be interested in it? And it's hard to say. I mean, I'm not going to probably touch it for all that much longer unless I just want to sit down and goof around. You know, and it's something that I could show people, I guess. You know, but it's not like, it's not a game in the sense of it keeps your attention and holds your attention. It's like, you know, any other piece of art or something. The Matrix is wondering if someone will mimic it to be a PC app. Something I did want to bring up, and actually somebody wanted to call in last week and just never got the courage, I guess. And I had watched some of this. There is some new gaming television out there, and it's on Spike TV, actually. And it's kind of funny because, you know, you think of G4 being the TV network. Well, G4 is trying to outdo Spike, and I think Spike's now trying to become the next G4. One of the shows is good, and one of the shows is not, in my opinion. There's two shows. They air at midnight on Saturday, so it's definitely a TiVo, VCR type thing. The first one's Fresh Baked Video Games, which is a bunch of comedy skits, and it does actually use machinima. It has some EverQuest 2 machinima in it. It's very tailored to the demographic, I guess. I'm just too old to be in the demographic. I don't care about seeing somebody getting kicked in the nuts just to get blitz or burnout. And they do like this crossfire segment between like somebody who's violent and somebody who's not, you know, and try to discuss games and try to have some kind of conversation about that. Just didn't do it for me. But Gamehead, which comes on after it, is actually quite good. They do have to have those Spike TV show tie-ins and stuff, but it's hosted by Jeff Keighley, who you probably recognize from G4. And he goes to studios and talks about what's going on there, and it was very interesting. Last week they did Blur, which does a lot of the FMV cutscenes, and one of the things they told about is that Killzone 2 trailer for the PS3 that everybody's like, oh, that's so great, that's such great real-time footage. They actually passed on creating that footage. So that is pre-rendered. It's an artist's conception, and that's one of the things that they showed. This week they went to an independent game developer, God, and I can't remember their name off the top of my head. I think it's Collaborative Studios. They're making the Da Vinci Code and all that stuff. Talking to them now, they're also saying that they're one of the last independent developers out there, which I don't think is quite true. But it was very well done, and it's actually one of the better gaming television shows. So I like Gamehead. That comes on at 12:30. Not a big fan of that Fresh Baked Video Games that comes before Spike TV, but I know somebody wanted to talk about it a little bit earlier. And I think that Spike's actually going to start out G4ing G4 while G4 tries to out Spike by getting Star Trek and The Next Generation and stuff like that. Now, The Matrix is pointing out that some of the clips on Gamehead are some of the same on G4, so I haven't watched G4 enough recently to recognize that. Fifth Dream says that Spike is only good for MXC and Jackie Chan movies. My thing is, you know, give Gamehead a try at least. And Tiger Claw does actually bring up something that's going to be kind of interesting. They're going to interview on Gamehead Uwe Boll, or Uwe Boll, or however the hell it's pronounced. And they actually talk about, he actually talks about how he doesn't understand why gamers are so against him. I think his thing is, you know, why are you mad at me? Why aren't you mad at Catwoman for not showing her boobies? When I show you boobies and sex, why are you, you know, and so I, that's going to be kind of interesting, if anything, for the hilarity value. And a couple of people earlier wanted me to talk about something I haven't played yet, but the Star Wars Empire at War demo for the PC. It's an RTS. The demo was released earlier this week. I downloaded it, and unfortunately I didn't get a chance to play it, so I don't have any impressions of it for you guys. But it's out there. It's a couple hundred megs, so go find it. Play it, and I'll talk a little bit about what I thought of it next week. But you can form your own opinion when you go play it. Anyway, let's talk about some next-gen systems. One thing I want to talk about was the Revolution. We had some rumors that were shot down, but this one looks like it's actually pretty promising. GameSpot reports that in an interview featured in a recent edition of Japanese newspaper Sankei Shinbun, Nintendo president Satoru Iwata stated, quote, "We can't disclose the Revolution's release period yet, but we have no plans to miss out on the year-end sales battle. As for North America, we need to release it by Thanksgiving, or otherwise we won't receive support from the retail industry. So the Revolution will be released prior to that period," unquote. Now, he avoided any specific comments about how much the Revolution would cost. However, he reiterated that the console will be reasonably priced. And he said, quote, "The amount of money that people are willing to spend on video games is getting less every year. Even if it is a superb machine, it's not going to sell if it's 50,000 yen, which is about $434. We plan to make the Revolution an affordable price," unquote. And Nintendo really hasn't released anything very pricey. Their highest price has been 25,000 yen, which is about $217 in Japan. Iwata also said that a working model close to the final form factor of the Revolution will be shown at E3 in May, which is something we kind of figured. So that, you know, and we're also going to get a real name that's not Revolution. Also going to go to Sony and the PS3, talking about their launch date. Gamma Sutra reports that according to a listing on Sony of Japan's official website, the company has listed six initial titles that it plans to debut for the PlayStation 3 console when it launches later this year. The specifically listed games are Polyphony Digital's latest Gran Turismo iteration, Genji 2, presumably a sequel to Yoshiki Okamoto's Samurai Action title for the PlayStation 2, Everybody's Golf 5, the latest in Camelot's popular cartoon golf series, and titles named Monster Carnival, Angel Rings, and The Eye of Judgment. No other information is currently available on the games. As to for actually when those games would debut, Sony CEO Howard Stringer's CES keynote gave little hint of a specific date for PS3 hardware launch, although he did reveal that over 4,000 PlayStation 3 development kits have been shipped to game developers. Dr. Feelgood about the PS3 says that what a craptastic list. Well, one company that you won't see making big budget titles anymore, unfortunately, is the company that gave you Psychonauts and Advent Rising. Majesco has quit full-price publishing and retreated to the safer ground of value publishing and hardware games, according to Next Generation. The firm yesterday posted awful sales figures for its fourth quarter and annual 2005. They were just $4.6 million compared to the $45.3 million for Q4 of 2004. Annual sales were $60 million, down by 100% year-on-year. The firm lost $70 million over the year. Majesco is selling off rights in development for its full-price games, most likely including Demonic and Taxi Driver. Company president Jesse Sutton said that, quote, "This has been a difficult year. We entered the premium console market with high expectations for success, but as a result of a variety of factors, we were not able to meet our expectations. Recently, we evaluated our product portfolio and have sold or canceled most of our premium console titles that were scheduled for release in 2006 and beyond. And publishing value, price, software, and games for handheld systems has historically been one of our strengths. We believe that the strategy is more prudent for Majesco at this time and offers us the most opportunity for success as it requires a relatively low investment in development and marketing," unquote. No more Majesco publishing. I guess, you know, it's the same like as the Beyond Good and Evil syndrome. They were good games, at least Psychonauts was. I haven't really played Advent Rising, although it has great music. And it wasn't from a lack of advertising. I remember actually hearing both of those titles advertised on the local alternative radio station during the afternoon drive. So it's not like they didn't advertise or anything like that. One thing that I do want to note, at least in Psychonauts' case, if you like Psychonauts, is that, you know, this doesn't exactly affect the developer, Double Fine. It doesn't affect Tim Schafer. They're just going to have to find somebody else to publish their next title. That's all that it means. But Majesco, they have always done, you know, budget value titles, whatever you want to call them, and they flirted with becoming a AAA developer and or AAA publisher and decided to go back. That kind of ties into our last story for the evening, which is all about the Academy of Interactive Arts and Sciences. And there was actually a little bit of discussion in our chat room last night, which is why I bring it up, and I'm going to bring up a point and my views on it, and some other people have some other views on it. GameSpot reports that 2006 has begun with the announcement of the nominees for the annual Interactive Achievement Awards. The prizes are doled out by the Academy of Interactive Arts and Sciences, the game equivalent of the Academy of Motion Pictures Arts and Sciences, which organizes the Oscars. Now, these awards are revealed at the group's annual DICE, which is Design, Innovate, Create, Entertain Summit, which will run from February 8th to 10th, 2006. Leading the nominees this year was God of War, developed and published by Sony Computer Entertainment America. The game got a whopping 11 nominations, including Overall Game of the Year, Action Adventure Game of the Year, and Outstanding Innovation in Gaming. The game's number of nominations ties last year's Game of the Year winner, Half-Life 2. Behind God of War was a two-way tie between, get this, Guitar Hero and Shadow of the Colossus. Red Octane and Harmonix's rhythm game and Sony's action adventure both clocked in at 7 nominees each, just ahead of this year's best-selling DS game, Nintendogs, with 6. And speaking of handhelds, the PSP saw its first nominations in the form of Burnout Legend and Grand Theft Auto Liberty City Stories. Despite a lukewarm reaction from critics, the Xbox 360's launch lineup also made the cut in the form of Activision and Infinity Ward's Call of Duty 2. Now, Game of the Year, the nominees for Game of the Year are God of War, Guitar Hero, Shadow of the Colossus, Nintendogs, and Call of Duty 2. Now, a lot of people are going, wait a minute, where's Resident Evil 4? Capcom's horror survival game, Resident Evil 4, earned top honors from many game news outlets, including GameSpot, but they didn't garner a single nomination for these awards. Also missing was Psychonauts, which was published by Majesco, which was a critical darling. A representative for the Academy told GameSpot that the reason the omission of the two games was that their publishers did not join the Academy. She said, quote, Majesco and Capcom are not members and chose the option not to be. According to the rules, you have to be a member for your games to be nominated, unquote. However, Resident Evil 4 had enough write-in votes to be on the list. The rep said, quote, there's a write-in option and Resident Evil 4 got written in, but Capcom chose not to play, unquote. And also talking about Majesco, the rep said that Majesco, which has fallen upon hard times that we just talked about, simply couldn't afford to join the Academy. So there are people out there that think that this cheapens the awards. This lessens because they're not being inclusive. And, you know, they are very upset at the Academy of Interactive Arts and Sciences for not nominating Capcom, even though Capcom said, we're not eligible. We don't want to be eligible. For whatever reason, Capcom didn't play, and I guess I personally have no problem with the Academy saying this is our awards. The Oscars don't have as much of a, you know, stringent policy. You don't have to be a member of the Academy to be nominated for an Oscar, but you do have to have been played in a movie theater in Los Angeles. So, you know, they've got some funky rules too. You know, even though it's more likely that you'd get a theater playing in Los Angeles for your movie than you would be being a member of the Academy as a game publisher. Some people are just really upset that, you know, to be nominated for the AIS awards, you have to be a part of the AIS, which I guess makes sense to me, but it doesn't make sense to other people. I'd love to hear people's thoughts on this. You can email them to me, blackwolf@allgames.com. You can leave a voicemail on our Skype line, Bobby Blackwolf Show, or you can email me an MP3. And I will play it on the air because I'd love to have some discussion about this because apparently I have the view that most people don't have, actually. That is all the time that we have for this week's edition of the Bobby Blackwolf Show. I want to thank the people on the live stream for hanging out with us a little bit late. We started a little bit late, but you guys hung through, and I thank you very much. And I thank all the podcast listeners out there that have tuned into the show and loved it. We'll be back again next week on Sunday night at 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific, on this same Shoutcast stream, so catch us live and interact with the show directly. Feel free to leave us a voicemail with us on any topic, Bobby Blackwolf Show, which is all one word on Skype, or you can email your thoughts and opinions to me, blackwolf@allgames.com, and you can join our official forums at allgames.com to take part in our community, which is now up after a server move. So our forums are back up. Now, we wouldn't be able to make this live show happen without those live chatters. And so here's the All Games tradition of reading them off. Apulo, DC Nate, Alt, Broodwitch, Drunk Pandas, Gita, GK128, Hendrix, Necobun, Ninjalt, Oshi, Rare, Reffy, Stone Raider, The Matrix, THK, Bam Bam, Burning Paper Sun, Captain Roy, Chrisville 1724, D5T, Dr. Feelgood, Fifth Dream, Gene Starwin, Hitman for Hire, Ichiban, Nuxonic, Massman, Mecha, OSU Fan, Rowan Ditch, Shady45, Soul Brother Rule, Sub-Z, TDB, Tedekin, The Silent Witness, Twinson, Tiger Claw, Visid, and Wyland. So once again, I want to thank you all for listening to the Bobby Blackwolf Show. Go leave a review on iTunes or something if you really like it. I'll see you guys next week.
A winner is you. The views and opinions expressed on tonight's broadcast are not necessarily the views and opinions of All Games Productions. This file may be freely distributed provided the original content is unedited and proper attribution is retained. For more information about All Games programming, go to www.allgames.com.
I'm white, yeah, so I shouldn't be rapping, that's right.